Welcome to the podcast, pals.
Welcome, welcome, welcome.
Welcome.
This is Throw on the Power. My name
Step
is Frank.
Step inside. I'm Marcus.
Hey, what's that? A carnival on the horizon?
Love it or hate it, we debate it.
Step
we're talking
right
about
up here and challenge the strong man.
We're talking about the Princess Bride.
He'll offer you a peanut.
I've just got to bring it up on my computer. So you guys talk and you do the intro.
Here in the middle, the bearded lady.
Ah, and a lot of pull up.
All right. So
that was really my best Andre the Giant.
Anybody want a peanut?
It's a very low.
It's going to be lower.
He sounds like he's got a goldfish right at the back of his throat. And like he's trying to stop it from going
Gold
down.
Man, written by William Goldman.
Hey.
Have we even talked about what we were talking about today?
No, Andre the Giant's career.
I said
we're just sticking with Andre the Giant, his persona.
I did today, say, we are talking about.
I already said it. You guys just weren't
today,
listening.
We're talking about.
Go on, Marcus.
What are we talking about?
The Princess Diaries.
Oh!
No,
so,
no, we're not.
But
no,
here's what happened.
But here's a story for you.
Marcus came over to my house for dinner a couple of weeks ago, and we sat down with his lovely wife and my lovely partner.
Short version, or Bridget.
Your
Bridget.
Known as my bumble hag.
Yeah, very good.
And she loves it. And I said, oh, we watched The Princess Diaries 1 and 2 today. Yeah. And Marcus goes, random. Okay. And I was like, well, you know, I thought I'd watch the second one as well. And you're like, as well as, I don't understand what you're talking about. I'm like, well, we're going to do it on the pod. And you were like, oh my God.
Wait, so
no,
you got
not.
Confused.
I read it and just saw Princess and went, oh, I can stop there. And decided that it was going to be Diaries. So Kath and I watched The Princess Diaries 1 and 2. If Marcus and I hadn't talked about it, there's a chance I came in today and you guys are like, all right, Princess Bride. And I'm like, oh, no.
Oh, that would have been funny.
That would
and
have been
I
funny.
Wish.
That's like the other day when we were recording and you were like, where are we? I'm at the venue. And I was like, you're at the wrong venue because we had changed it and you hadn't read the chat because Tom doesn't know how to read.
And I went from yelling at you on the phone to 10 minutes later calling you back and being like, you know, I think it's going to be fine. I'm on my way.
I know it's going to be fun. And also, then you beat Marcus there anyway.
That's true. That was interesting.
Right. Oh, well, I'm just saying. All right.
The Princess Bride. One thing.
Okay.
The Princess Diaries 2 is Chris Pine's debut. So it's his first film. So we were talking about the Chris's recently, and it's just something to think that is Kath always, when she listened to that episode, she's like, when I think of Chris Pine, I think of The Princess Diaries 2.
I just don't.
Okay. Yep. He's very good looking in that movie. It's not very good. Abigail Breslin's in it.
As is tradition.
Yeah,
okay,
nice.
So.
She's little.
The Princess Bride.
On this podcast, we rate films out of 11.
We do.
Thomas?
Yes.
What do you got?
The reason for that
You need
is,
to provide an explanation.
Yes.
It doesn't make sense.
I need to provide an explanation. The reason we rate these pods out of 11 is if you encountered Christopher Guest's character in this movie and you went to give him a high five on both hands, you were giving him a high
11.
10 plus 1, which would be 11, yes.
What do you say, high 11? You're ruining everything.
He has 11 fingers.
Yes, because
a man with six fingers killed my father. You still fuck it up somehow.
I do.
Do you want to try a high five?
Sure.
That's better.
I don't know about that. That's pretty bad.
All right.
It looks like
that's
we
about
were,
what I expected from you two.
We were shout your name. Warning each other off.
Shush. Shout your name if you like this film.
Tom.
I haven't rated it.
Frank!
Feels like you might be like right in the middle.
I think I'm a dislike.
Oh!
Numbers. Start with Marcus. Go numbers.
I'm going to give it a 5.4.
No. Oh, he doesn't really. He's not mad about it. Okay. Yeah. Thomas.
9.3.
What? Very high.
What?
Whoa!
Jesus Christ.
What do you mean 9.3?
Who are all these guitarists?
Wow.
9.3. Okay, Frank.
I'll go, 6.9. Hey-o.
So you're going to lead with 9. You're about to crack him for a 9 point something.
I got confused for a second. I was trying to lean and press buttons and God, my job is hard
nine's
here.
9's high for this film.
I think this movie is wonderful. Really.
Do you think it's all time one of the greatest rom-coms of all time?
I think that if we're going to get into it very quickly,
let's go.
The romantic aspect, while a very good sort of like ambient quality of it, because it has so many romantic and fantastical features and like aesthetics, it's not the most compelling part. Like the Wesley and Buttercup stuff is very sweet, but it's pretty shallow.
Why is she called Buttercup?
This movie is so weird.
It's wonderful.
It's really weird, isn't it?
It's joyful.
It opens with a bedridden boy.
Okay, whoa. I think you're overselling it.
Yeah, that's a savage
this
take.
This child
a bedridden boy.
I guess anyone in the
that's
morning.
That's the character's name.
We're all bedridden.
It's the like, grandkid.
Mr. Savage.
Grandchild.
Mr. Savage.
Fred Savage.
Fred Savage is bedridden. His legs don't work. Hey, do you ever see his legs work?
No, I guess
we don't
not.
Know.
That's a
we never
assumption.
See him rid
weird
himself
assumption.
Of his bed.
He's stuck to that
he's
bed.
Stuck to the bed. You know, we watched that part of that
his
episode.
His grandfather comes in and reads him a story.
We watched part of that episode of It's Always Sunny the other day. Mm. Fred Savage directed it.
He directed a lot of episodes.
He directs so much. He directs like a TV director. But it was just fun to see that. Like, yeah, oh, Fred Savage.
Oh, sure. Yeah, nice. You know. Okay, yeah.
Go on. Connection.
Also, Deadpool do a little homage.
Who cares?
Correct good. Response.
So Fred Savage is in bed. His grandfather comes in. He's like, oh, I'm sick, I'm bored. And the grandfather goes, I'm going to read you a story.
Who's the grandfather?
Fred Savage's...
Peter Falk, Columbo.
Peter what?
Peter Falk.
Michael Jordan's agent?
One more thing. I'm Columbo.
You know, TV's Columbo?
You know. From, sit down, take a seat, take a seat.
From kid. The Offer? The series about the Godfather? Yeah,
I know that sounded like every character in The Offer.
Yeah. You sounded like, what's his name?
Robert Evans?
No. Giovanni Ribisi, who plays.
Oh, really?
What a he's king. Like, hey, I'm going to make this movie. I really like it.
Sounds like he's doing a Columbo impression.
This is, he's playing Columbo.
Dad's like proper New Yorker. Granddad. Like,
yeah. Okay. Hey, I got this thing like for
you. Oh, Columbo is in
the oh, sorry, I didn't know you didn't like that. You know, but he played a TV character called Columbo that ran for a very long time, and he was like a TV detective. It was a big thing. That's what he's best known for.
Sounds great.
Sure.
Peter Falk, he's great.
So
Falk?
Yeah, fork sounds better than
this people. Is a fork in the road. Can we continue?
Mm.
I don't know. What? No, good, just try and stop
nice spoon me.
So don't spoon me. Stop touching
anyway,
me.
Anyway.
Robin
Savage.
Robin Wright.
Bedridden kid. Can't walk.
Grandfather starts reading a story. And then we go into the fantasy world of the Princess Bride.
Yes, we do.
We meet Robin
Which
Wright.
Which is very never-ending story.
Sure. Yeah, maybe not quite as sinister. The never-ending story it's like the happy has a lot ending. More like, ooh.
It's not the first and not the last I'm going to.
The only comparison I have
Well, it's never-ending, so it's going to have to come up again.
The only comparison I have is Robin Hood Men in Tights. It feels like the same world as Robin Hood Men in Tights, which is also a Cary Elwes film.
Like 6 years later, right?
93, yeah.
I think that film's a lot like more.
That's the funniest film of all time.
That's a take.
That's
I guess.
A take, yeah.
It's so good. It's better than this,
it
for
is
sure.
Very good.
Kath loves that movie. She showed it to me for the first time and I thought it was pretty good.
Yeah, but you're dumb,
of
so it doesn't
time,
matter what you think.
Of all times, be cool.
Well,
that is a Mel Brooks
we'll
movie, right?
Yeah.
That is like.
Every time they do a Mel Brooks movie, they burn our village down.
So I chose this film.
Yes, Marcus chose it.
I chose this film because I'd never seen it. And I grew up. Yeah, and. Well, you knew that, right?
No.
You didn't know that?
No,
oh, okay.
I didn't
that's
know that.
Like exactly why I chose
well, he
this
accidentally
film.
Watched The Princess Diaries as a kid.
This is one of those films where. Around the time, I'd seen everything around it, and somehow this just went under the radar.
What do you mean everything around it? The Neverending Story?
Yeah, like
Robin
just
Hood
everything that we grew up with, you know, like the majority of things. But I was, you know, watching The Rescuers down under.
Yeah, but this is 87. This is before us.
Yeah, I still, like, yeah, Neverending Story.
I'm just poo-pooing
but
on
you.
But
you could say, continue. As an example of another 80s movie that feels like a staple now, Back to the Future. Right, like that.
Sure.
It was like if
sure.
you watched that, you watched this. Yeah. I've never seen Back to the Future still. So.
I knew a lot of people that had seen this, and I somehow just I didn't understand how I'd missed it. Mm-hmm. Anyway, mm-hmm. So here we are. I watched it. I do wonder if nostalgia plays heavily on this.
Yeah,
I'm guessing both of you have watched this at a young age.
No, this is my first time.
First time for you?
Yeah.
Interesting.
And I watched it when I was like maybe 17 or 18, and it was one of those films that people said. By the way, put alongside this, I'd say like Edward Scissorhands also fits into that sort of grouping maybe. And I think it's like a similar 80s sort of like kids grew up watching this film and they have a lot of affection for it. Like it's not the same type of movie,
but
it has those fantastic
Princess
elements.
Bride, I would say, has stood the test of time in pop culture. It's always referenced. We do
homage. You don't think Edward Scissorhands has at all?
No.
I think that's a weird
Where's it referenced?
Edward Scissorhands?
Yeah.
I think Tim Burton.
Every time you use your scissors, you go,
I think when people say Tim Burton, they mention that.
No.
At least out of the top three.
Frank, I would disagree.
Respectfully, and I don't like Edward Scissorhands that much. It's
you
not
don't have
movie.
To be respectful here. But
okay, disrespectfully, what the fuck, bro?
Wrong, man. I would say Nightmare Before Christmas. Well, Beetlejuice now.
I would argue Beetlejuice, Jack Skellington, and Edward Scissorhands would be a trifecta of some of the most iconic characters of the last 30 years. Like you would, 35 years, I suppose.
Yeah, 35 years maybe, but 30 years, no way. You are way out of the limb there.
We digress.
I watched this movie for the first time when I was 17. Everyone or a lot of friends I had loved it. And my mum knew it. And I watched it just kind of like, oh, this will be okay. And it charmed the shit out of me.
So I was on the phone
even
to
at
mum.
17.
At 17,
really?
Charmed me.
Really?
A lot.
Okay. Interesting. I was on the phone to mum the other day and I said, we're doing Princess Bride. And she goes, oh, good. Yeah, yeah. And I said, yeah, it'll be good for a first time watch. And she goes, sorry? What do you mean?
Mm.
And I went, I've never seen it. She goes, how did I fail you as a mother?
Ooh.
And well, I went, good question.
We don't have time.
Yeah,
we
got off the topic of the film.
Arnie Allison is just a lovely lady.
No, she is. I didn't mean that. Love you, Mum.
The mayor of Devonport, well done.
Just a bit.
Second term.
I don't know. But she's right. Like, it is a film that her and I would have watched together and would have I would have been into, I guess, at the time that I was watching films of that. Yeah. Sort of caliber.
Yeah.
I love the Never Ending Story, and that's why I said I'd bring this up. But I guess that was my expectation going in, thinking of the time, thinking of that early sort of era of late 80s, early 90s of puppetry use in film. I guess I expected more.
You the fantasy world.
The fantasy world, the dark fantasy as well. Like 80s was known for its dark fantasy.
Yeah.
This is a lot lighter.
This was. Yeah, and so fucking slow.
Oh.
The pace.
Really?
I was enjoying moments. There was really a lot of moments in this film that I did enjoy.
Yeah.
The pace was not one of them. It was
a
drag.
I did not notice that at all. I had I found the first half an hour, I was like, what? What? Because in my mind, it was literally a beautiful romance story.
Yeah.
I didn't realize it was a...
It takes a sharp turn, hey?
It's a very silly, funny comedy fantasy adventure.
Yeah.
And I was like, what? Like, they start off with As You Wish and they're falling in love and all that stuff. And then you get to the scene where they're about to have the first sword fight and he's climbing the rope. Mm. And he's like, what does he say? Oh, I don't remember.
You could hurry it up a bit. You know, like when he's talking to him when he's on the side.
Yeah. I forget what he's
like. If you don't mind, this is a lot harder than it looks. You know, that entire...
Give me a hand. Well, if you promise not to...
I swear on my father.
Can I say, because your recollection of that scene very much is how I sort of perceived it as well, but the dialogue itself was so softly spoken throughout the entire film.
Mm.
It almost sounded like really bad ADR at times.
Like it probably is.
There was something about this film. And again, I understand that with a lens of being like, this is from an early time, you know, you've got to watch it from the period. The sound was so quiet. Like there was nothing going on around the dialogue.
Little tip.
Yep.
Just the volume. Just turn the volume up.
No.
Oh, this is your tip for them.
I found, for Marcus.
I'll give you a clear example of what I mean. I can't remember his name.
Inigo Montoya?
No. So the guy in the black mask.
The Dread Pirate.
Oh, the Dread Pirates.
Wesley.
Yeah.
Yep. Wesley. So when he's fighting the giant the first time.
Oh, yeah.
When they're talking to each other, it's like they're whispering to each other in a library or something. Like, it's really odd.
I can only imagine.
Kerry Elwes as Wesley kind of does that. Watch out for me.
But not even with the wispy sort of stuff. It's like, yes, so here I am.
I believe you.
Yes, I believe you.
So what should we do now?
It would have all been ADR though, because filming outside, that looked like it was actually outside.
Obviously when they're falling down the hill.
And Andre the Giant. As you wish. Very funny. Andre the Giant probably was ADR'd as well. I mean, he's not an actor. Mm. So he's like doing this on set, and probably afterwards they had to be like, you got to speak up. You got to project here, man.
Mm.
I think what Wesley's doing, what Kerry Elwes is doing, is he's doing Errol Flynn, right? He's playing on these swashbuckling, dashing, like Douglas Sirk characters from like the 30s or 40s. And it's a bit of a twist on it because obviously there's some weirder shit going on in the movie, and some of the dialogue has a little bit of a modern 80s-ish snappy rhythm to it. But that's what he's doing. He's doing the like, what should we do now? You know, not prepare to be disappointed. What does he say? Inigo Montoya says to him, like,
prepare to die.
Who are you?
Oh, you're talking about Wesley. Sorry.
I cannot tell you. I must know. Except being disappointed or something like that, you know. Oh, and it just the way in which he get used to being disappointed. But I do really like the rhythms of the dialogue. I really love their exchanges in this film.
I didn't. And then I found I was settling into it. Because obviously in the reality, it's the novel, it's the book that the grandfather's reading, and the language might be, you know, heightened for that reason.
Yes. Yeah,
absolutely. To me, it's lacking in energy. It's not punchy.
Well, we've got to admit, when we've got Andre the Giant, Mandy Patinkin, Cary Elwes, and Robin Wright, and then next to them we've got Inconceivable! It's just kind of like, well, yeah, everything that guy does is extra, and everything's going to seem He's a hard voice. How do you Wallace do Wallace Shawn? How do you do Wallace Shawn?
Yeah,
inconceivable.
That's not bad.
It's a bit like a.
Yes.
It's like a choking.
That was actually quite
good. Those are the shrinking eels.
Anyways, guys, are really high. No, yes. I've lost it. But he's dinosaur like a, from Toy Story, right? That's who most people know him
that,
as.
But he's also from The Incredibles. He's Mr. Incredible's boss.
Oh, yes.
Take too. One more step and you're fired. You know, he's yeah. great in that.
You're not quite getting it, but that's
fine.
No, it's
fine. A really
people,
hard
people
voice.
Understand.
Yes. Thanks, buddy.
Do you, I, okay, it's hard to explain funny. What I'm trying to explain, I guess.
I do know what you mean because, I mean, it's from
whether
87.
It's a sound
so it's,
design issue.
Yeah, it okay. feels like there's not enough atmosphere or there's not enough like.
Yes.
Yeah, the dialogue's and been so, placed below the mix kind
it,
of thing.
That's
yep.
it.
Yeah, I understand.
So to me, it feels like it's one pop song away from being the best pantomime I've ever seen on screen.
It is very yep. pantomimic.
Well, that, it is that, pantomimic.
That's my take on this whole
and it's
thing.
And it's so childish in its in the into the fantasy world and the danger is quite it's played for laughs almost.
Mm. There's no real death in this movie.
The Wallace Shawn death is the most
that's it
outrageous.
There's a pretty horrific death in this film.
A Wallace Shawn getting poisoned.
No, it's when
oh he comes back
Wesley
to life though.
Stabs that puppet creature in the fire spot
oh.
or whatever.
Oh yeah, the giant rodent yeah. in the forest.
It's horrific.
That's funny.
Yeah.
Just over and
this
over
thing
again.
Is dying in real time. I feel like it's a real creature.
Well, there's a human in that.
Yeah.
That, like, that is the guy who played R2-D2 yeah. taken like, and put
that's
in that.
Some oh. poor day player is just getting throttled.
Some child just dressed
it's
up.
It's okay. There's a pillow there, so it won't hurt too much.
That's brutal. That's the most brutal part. But everyone else, he dies and then comes back to life. Like there is no, oh no, sorry. What's his name? The six-fingered man gets killed by Inigo Montoya in one of the greatest sequences in the history of cinema. So
yeah, when
that
you,
as well.
Inigo Montoya is going to die. So
this is the problem.
Yeah.
I really love this movie. Nothing is as good as Inigo Montoya.
No.
Every Mandy time he's not on screen, you're like, where is Inigo Montoya? Like, and if he was in it too much, it would spoil it. But it is that stretch after Cary Elwes gets kidnapped, or not kidnapped, but taken away and tortured, up to when they get back to Inigo, I'm like, yeah, this is not the best part of the movie. I like it, but it's lacking, you know, and the color's a little gone from it.
And I may have said this to you before.
Yeah.
But, and I stand by it. I think that Cary is the best of the worst actors on the planet.
I think
he's so bad he's good.
I think that's true, but I think he's genuinely good in this. And I agree with you most of the time.
He's used very well.
Yes, when I see
when
him
is he
in
bad? I have something he's bad in.
I think
you misunderstand
what
I mean, though.
He doesn't mean a bad actor, but it's just kind of
what
like.
What does Marcus mean?
I'm so sorry.
Jesus.
On paper, his performances are so shooting.
No, he doesn't mean that. What he means is, let me explain. I just want to talk.
You're wrong, Marcus. You don't know what you're talking about. And shut up, Tom, for backing him up. It's okay, man. Now go on, Marcus. I'm letting Marcus finish.
He's so over the top, as Tom said. He's what I perceive as an overactor. And somehow gets away with it. It lands every time he does it. Even in Saw, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's a lot in that. And somehow you get to the end, you're like, I accept it.
I still believe it.
Like,
it. I still believe it. Yeah.
I feel him acting and feel him sort of licking his lips every time he does it. This is one of the only performances of his where I'm like, well, he's playing the dashing, swashbuckling guy, you know, the stable hand, and he just looks great. You know who he looks like in this movie, and it took me fucking like 40 minutes to work out who it was. He looks like Austin Butler. Like when he's got those scenes where he's walking through the fire swamp, oh my God, they have the same bone structure. It's insane how similar they look.
Yeah.
It's kind of uncanny. But he's so good in this. Robin Wright's very good, though. She doesn't get a lot to do.
She doesn't get, like, this was one of her really early roles.
It was her debut film.
She's modeling.
And maybe it was in a TV show or something. But yes, this was her debut film. Apparently,
she's great in this.
She's very good. Yeah. Apparently, she showed up at the house where they were like having casting calls. William Goldman was there, Rob Reiner was there, and they opened the door and she was there in a little white dress and the sun was behind her and they said it made a halo of her hair and she looked up at them and William Goldman was like, well, that's what I wrote. So they were just like, all right, it's her. Like straight away, they just Uma Thurman
and also
Whoopi
such
Goldberg.
A,
we looked at it as well, but no, they
Whoopi Goldberg.
Whoopi Goldberg would have been an interesting choice for this.
As Buttercup,
real different movie, I think.
Should have been funny. Which is good.
No eyebrows. Yeah.
They didn't give much to do. And also, like, this is such a strange thing to notice, but she's so natural in it. Like in terms of makeup,
yeah,
it's just her in a dress, no makeup,
stunning,
and very natural performance. Yeah. Very, very good. I like that. But obviously, it's kind of Mandy Patinkin's movie, right? Like every single thing.
Wait, what?
Excuse me.
Sorry. No, I missed that.
I don't think it's Mandy Patinkin's film as Enigma Montoya, and Frank vigorously shook his head.
Yeah.
Like some sort
that's
of.
That's interesting.
Some child.
You know whose movie it is?
Seeing.
Yeah, it's Fred Savage's. You know that. No, I think Cary Elwes is the guy I follow.
He's very good. He's very good.
I think Mandy Patinkin is fantastic, but he's the supporting player, which is always the more interesting role, interesting character, interesting performance.
I'm not trying to be rude, really, but it sounds like we're saying the same thing, which is Cary Elwes is literally our hero, the guy we follow. So but every time Enigma is on screen, you're like, well, yeah, but that's the guy who pops more.
Yeah, I know. I think they're equally pop.
If someone gave me a solo film of either, I'd be watching Enigma for sure.
I would be watching Enigma Montoya. Although, all day long,
Wesley's journey to get back to Buttercup when he's doing first the sword fight and the gymnastics on the mat is great, and then the game of wits.
Yes.
Yeah.
Like the three challenges. The challenges three as he goes through all the people.
I've already worked it out! And then, like, explains. And he's like, you're stalling. Yeah. No, I haven't. And then, like, talks about, but you must have known that I knew that that was from Australia. And you're like, what is he talking about?
Where
like,
he is
weird references to Australia in it, hey.
Brilliant. Like he just goes on this tear. It's very, very funny.
And the whole time Wesley knows that whatever happens.
It doesn't matter.
Yeah, it doesn't matter.
And his grand plan is I'll swap the drinks. And it's like, that doesn't achieve much, man. Like,
yeah, it's still 50-50, man.
Although I think he thinks that if he goes to drink and Wesley doesn't react, then it must be that his goblet wasn't poisoned. And so then he thinks by swapping them, he has actually tricked him. But it's, anyway, very funny
stuff. I think
it's good stuff. So I think Wesley is.
Oh, sorry.
Just.
He's so good.
He's so good. Yeah. And if it was more of that, I'd watch a solo film.
Okay. See, I didn't really jump on the Wesley train until the scene toward the end of the film, unfortunately, where he's still lifeless. So his head's the only thing can move. And the guys all put their hands in to say, you know, here we go. And he kind of corpse-like throws his arm in.
Yeah.
Very funny.
See,
that was that sort of clowning aspect to it that I wanted from him more, whereas before it was a bit cringe for me.
Yeah.
It's a bit too...
too earnest?
A little bit, and a stage actor on screen.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes,
but there's an importance of being earnest in a film like this.
No. So I know Cary Elwes from Robin Hood Men in Tights. That's like a film I grew up watching. And
he's perfect in that.
Absolutely.
I got to watch it again.
Whereas this, he's funny in this, but it's, you know, I guess he hadn't been discovered as an actual comedy actor per se. Yeah, so he does a lot of funny stuff and you go,
it's a bit misguided for me at times because it's like, is he trying to be the comedy here or is he meant to be the straight man? And I could never work it out.
I think he's roguish and he's like quick-witted, but I don't think he says anything that makes you like barely laugh. You go like, ha-ha, how droll. Like,
no, and,
you
know, and he does. And then the physical humor in the last bit is funny, but that's as we're sort of getting into it. I think the role is better for him in Robin Hood. I don't like because he's winking at the audience, he's having a lot of fun, and he's leading a troop of merry men in just a very silly way and gets to tell jokes and gets to be a leading man in a comedy, whereas this isn't a comedy, so he can't be the funny lead.
Yeah.
So it's a weird line to draw.
Yeah.
Because he has to be strong, he has to be earnest.
Yeah.
But
I might boil this down to another pacing issue. Maybe that was there's something that didn't land for me the entire trip. Like I really wanted to get on board. Mm. And I just wasn't quite there. I enjoyed the end of the film a lot more. I think where I did a literal spit take. I was drinking at work while I was watching this and then not alcohol. I was taking a drink of my coffee.
At work.
And it's when they're at the top of the hill. It's right before he falls down the hill. She pushes him.
Yeah.
And up until this point, he's kept up the whole facade of who he is and what he does. And then she pushes him down the hill to escape him, I guess is her plan. Mm. And as he starts to roll down the hill, he yells out, as you wish. And I'm like, now I don't know what's going on.
As in why he would say that?
Yes.
Well, that's
because obviously
he knows
that she knows, right? Like it's a tell. It's the biggest tell he could have given her as to who he is. So why is he hiding his identity?
Why is he being so cruel?
Well,
until this point.
Yeah, it's a weird scene.
I thought the scene was like leading towards it in like a.
What's his end game? He's the man in black. He takes her away. Where's he taking her?
He wanted to reveal, but then she's like getting annoyed at him.
I think he's trying to suss out. This is my explanation of it, even though I agree. I'm watching that with Kath and she's like, so that's Wesley. And I'm like, no, it's not. And she's like, yes, it is. And he's being a dick. And I'm like, no, it's not. Like trying to pretend. Yeah. But clearly it is. So then it's like, well, I guess he's trying to suss out why she's marrying Prince Humperdinck. Like that's why he's like, didn't take you long to turn tail and choose the prince over the stable. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, it's like, this is not the way to do it, man. Like, maybe be a little bit nicer. So it doesn't make a lot of sense that once he rolls down the hill, she hears as you wish. She runs after him. She's like, I love you again. She'd be like, you didn't have to talk to me that way. Yeah, like, maybe that was a little rough.
It's far too quick a transition from what they were doing to where they end up.
Yep.
And it's literally the rolling of the hill.
Fair criticism. Yeah. But rolling down the hill really discombobulates you, so maybe concussion.
Inconceivable. Oh, it's getting worse.
you're starting to sound like a character from Big Mouth.
Yes.
Yeah, Nick Kroll. You're doing a lot.
Not to brag, but. It feels like we've. You go.
Oh, no, I was just going to talk about two guest appearances that happened later on.
Oh, my God.
Oh, wait. Well, can we do MVP?
Are we doing MVP now? Wait, let's do it. Go ahead.
I want to do it.
Quick.
Because I want to announce mine. My MVP is Billy Crystal.
Yeah.
He has the funniest line in the movie to me.
It took me too long to know that was Billy Crystal until halfway. I didn't look at the cast.
Yeah.
And it was halfway through that big scene he has, the three-quarter mark of the film. And I went, fuck, that sounds like Mike. Oh, my God.
It's Mike Wazowski.
See, what blew Kat's mind, she was like, oh, Billy Crystal. And then his wife. And I was like, that's Carol Kane. She's from Unbreakable Kimmy Schmidt. And Kat was like, what? Like, that's her from Kimmy. She's so good.
They are incredible. So funny together.
When he pushes on his stomach and Wesley goes, true. And they're like, did he? You hear? You heard him? He said true love, and he said no. It sounded like true love, but it was really to blave. And the way he says to blave is the funniest fucking thing I've ever heard in my life.
He takes the Jewish caricature.
He's doing
and
a
just
very
runs with a
Yiddish like wizard, right? And he's. Him and Carol Kane, apparently, they're just in there and they're just improvising a lot of it. Rob Reiner was like, just go off, do whatever you want.
And it was like, no one was allowed on set. Or like everyone had to just be like, don't fucking react. Just let them play.
How would you deal with it?
Well, apparently, Rob Reiner had like cramps or something after the day of filming with Billy Crystal. He was like, I just laughed too much and I'm in actual pain now.
it's so funny.
But I didn't laugh that much at the scene.
I think the whole scene is amusing.
It's very enjoyable.
Were you grinning ear to ear though?
No, I do. I was grinning,
but not ear. I was like, yeah, good. Then Carol Kane, and then they're waving, goodbye. They're not gonna
think
make
it'll
it.
Work. It'll take a miracle, right? Yeah. You know,
I found it very endearing up until the point that I knew it was Billy Crystal, and then I could not stop smiling.
Yeah, okay.
That says a lot about him as an actor for me personally.
We love him.
Also like. It doesn't get enough credit how much these days when characters – I mean, in comedic movies, you get a bit more leeway because it's all right if it looks a little silly. Mm. But the fucking makeup is incredible.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
It looks really good. And you watch practical makeup – not in all movies. Some movies have great. But I've seen movies recently where they try to do something similar to this. And it's like, what the fuck is this silly putty that you've put on them? And they look so good in 87 in this movie.
How'd you get it so wrong?
It's excellent how good they look. That scene, yes, makes me smile the whole time. Who's my MVP, by the way, obviously, is Mandy Patinkin as Inigo Montoya.
But it's a tough one. I wanted to get to him.
Love him.
Cary Elwes, then.
Yes.
Yep. Mm.
Okay.
As you wish.
As you wish.
Honorable mention to Rebel Wilson.
Don't.
What? For wiping the blood off him in the pit of despair.
Oh, wow. You're going with what's his name as the albino or the albino? He's some sort of an English actor. I can't remember. Mel Smith.
The albino. Yeah.
You got a hate boner for Rebel Wilson.
I do today for some reason.
Hate boner.
It's a horrible phrase.
It's true.
It's not true. What do you mean?
It's a truly horrible phrase.
Love. Hate rection.
To blave. It's so funny every time. Okay, I want to talk about scenes we haven't talked about enough.
Sure.
Okay. Inigo Montoya and the Dread Pirate Roberts fighting for the first time.
Yeah.
Right.
That is one of the greatest scenes in movies.
That's where it felt very pantomimey for me.
Pirates of Penzance. Yes. Like it has very Gilbert and Sullivan sort of vibe to it.
And then the pole for the like, I don't know how you describe it.
Oh, the gymnastics pole.
Like, yeah, the gymnastics pole. And like you can tell it's obviously
foam mat
underneath.
Absolutely. But it feels like
just a fun set.
My favorite bit was, they're fighting. It's like, but now you didn't know. I'm not left-handed.
Yeah.
And he stops. And then they fight for a bit more. And then Wesley goes,
I admit it, you're better than me.
But I'm also not left-handed. Ah!
And why are you smiling? You know, and the conversation they have, one of the greatest backstories ever, something this movie does incredibly well, is it breaks the rules of show don't tell. It has so much telling and it is compelling. When he sits down and he tells the story, he tells the story of what happened to his father, what happened, the six-fingered man killed him, and then he's been on this blood oath, whatever. He's revenging.
He
needs some blood.
A blood drive.
And he tells that story and, of course, says the classic line, I plan to see him and say, hello, I am Inigo Montoya. You killed my father. Prepare to die. Maybe one of the top, I don't know,
Mandy
20 Patinkin, lines.
Everyone yells that at him and he loves it.
Oh,
he
and
loves
Inconceivable
it.
And That are the two lines that everyone says from this movie. Mm-hmm. And then later on, Cary always does the same thing when they're going through the fire forest and he tells the story of the Dread Pirate Roberts. Mm. And I'm watching that and I'm like, I don't know how Rob Reiner did this, where he's telling her a story about what happened. But the way he did it is he made it a beautiful setting. Really, you're right, pantomimic. It almost looks like you're watching something, a stage play. Mm. It feels a little high school-y, but in a really admirable sense. And he's just telling her this story of how he lived and how he became the Dread Pirate Roberts. Good night, Wesley. Probably kill you tomorrow, you know. And that line he said of, please, please, I need to live, really works for me. That's one of the few moments of the film where I'm like, that lands emotionally. That's just his line that gets him through, that he's just, I need to live. I love this girl. I need to live and see her again. Fucking love this movie. I really, really, really adore it.
It absolutely is charming. And my experience of it is I got to around that point and I was like, I'm in.
Yeah.
I'm in. And I watched the first 30 minutes with Luce and then I think she had to go somewhere and she was like, you finished it without me? I was like, yeah, it was great. She was like, the start sucked. He's like, and that's how we both felt. We were both watching it being like, not great, not really grabbing me. Can we talk about Rob Reiner?
Yeah. Rob Reiner has one of the weirdest, should we do a Butler's Pantry? He has a weird fucking career.
The Butler in a pantry with a mic.
Rob Reiner version.
The Butler's Pantry.
That's good. I like that.
He's Jess's dad from New Girl. Weird.
Weird.
Look it up.
He's Leo's dad from Wolf of Wall Street.
That's also true. He was doing those.
Who rings the fucking middle of dinner?
Hello? Rightio, chap. Rightio. Yeah, right. Cheerio, then. God damn it. He's so funny.
Where he's like, who spends $180,000 on lunch?
And then Leo says, the girls, Dad, they're nude and they're hairless from the eyebrows down. The eyebrows down. I never was a fan of the bush. And it cuts to Rob Reiner. He's like, really? I don't mind it. So good in that movie.
He directed Spinal Tap, right? Like that's his first early film. Days. Yeah,
this is Spinal Tap. Then he did a movie after that with John Cusack that I can't remember the name of, the Sure Thing, I think.
Are you want me to look it up?
Is that The Sure Thing? The Sure Thing, maybe. It's like one of his not particularly remembered movies, but everyone says it's fine.
The Sure Thing. And then
he's got Stand By Me.
Yep.
Then he's got like...
The Princess Bride. Then he's got your mate.
Misery.
When Harry Met Sally.
When Harry Met Sally, which is the greatest rom-com of all time.
Mm. Yeah.
Then Misery. Then North. Right?
Then A Few Good Men.
Which is apparently one of the worst films I've never seen it. And then The American President. He's got seven or so movies in the course of 10 years that are iconic.
Yeah.
And everything he's made since then
is
trash.
Sorry. No one goes, man, Rob Reiner, he really crushed it as a director. Like, no one talks about it.
I think he is talked about in very particular film circles who are like, look, if you're talking about the 80s and the early 90s, it's Rob Reiner. But it's such a specific corridor that it's like, and it's such a, he's tarnished his career so much in the 30 years since. No one gives a fuck anymore.
I just remember from the South Park stuff that they did on him.
I remember.
Pretty brutal.
Yes. They're not very nice to Rob Reiner in South Park.
Why?
They're just kind of like Rob Reiner's this guy who's like, oh, we need to like Ben smoking or whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, in fairness,
smoking is really bad.
And he's jamming like sticks of butter into his mouth and stuff.
Which is like, you know, making fun of a guy for his weight and then also being like, yeah, smoking's great. They have that song at the factory where people are smoking. Yeah. It's a funny song. But there's a little part of you that's like, yeah, guys, smoking's bad for you.
Tom, to reference your BJs, he directed LBJ.
He did with Woody Harrelson. That's true.
Can we never reference Tom's BJs again?
He can't stop referencing his BJs.
Are you saying my BJs are LBJs? Yeah, I take the L on them.
What does that mean?
Oh,
take the L.
No, let's not.
And that's okay. You guys are not.
We're in the pantry. Unpack it.
Too old. So Rob Reiner.
Take
is,
the L.
take inventory in this pantry, man. God damn.
Rob Reiner is known for that, but he's also known for his acting. Yes. He acts in Spinal Tap. He's in an episode of 30 Rock as himself, right? He is Jess Day's dad. And then he's married to Jamie Lee Curtis, or he's divorced from Jamie Lee Curtis as Jess Day's mum in New Girl, and of course she's married to Christopher Guest, who's the six-fingered man in The Princess Bride.
Oh, wow.
Christopher Guest is a lord. He's a baron, right? You know, he's one of the guys from...
He can't have kids.
You're going to laugh at that, Marcus? You're going to get another one? Is that what's happening?
Like, it wasn't the best, but it was kind of
Look
funny.
At yourself.
You've got to acknowledge it.
Not bad.
It's some dumb shit you would say.
Yeah, but it would be funny if I said
That's not how it works, idiot. Get over yourself.
Christopher Guest is a baron. He is the bass player in
Spinal Tap.
And, yeah, he's married to Jamie Lee Curtis, which makes her a lady, technically, like of the British Empire, but she doesn't accept that title. But all of this to say Rob Reiner has his people that he's worked with a lot, and he's made some really interesting films. I mean, I don't know. Out of those, you love Stand By Me.
Love Stand By Me.
Stand By Me. Few Good Men. Classic, right?
Yeah.
The American President. Not a movie that everyone talks about, but it's pretty fantastic with Michael Douglas and Annette Bening and Michael J. Fox, right?
Not seen it.
Misery.
So.
Fucking, like, Misery. Kathy Bates.
Last Company. Absolutely. Went.
Tough watch. Have you seen Misery, Frank?
No.
Props don't.
Oh, what a PP?
He would absolutely PP his pants.
You say Mizer PP and you get mad at me for making a joke about Baron? Mate, you're worse than anybody.
Okay. Mate.
Mate. Mate.
Pow. Sorry.
Have a look at yourself.
Throw in the mate.
Chuck in the mate.
Jesus.
Oh, I hate everything about it.
Anyway, Rob Reiner, interesting guy, but he is, he's very much not coming back. He's not suddenly going to make a good movie anytime soon. And yet he kind of ran the table on this.
I don't think he needs
period.
To. I think he's
got this.
His dash,
he's
right?
got a few good men. Yeah. He's got Stand
Bit of a legacy.
William Goldman, the writer, has his four known credits are Butch Cassidy and Sundance Kid, The President's Men, Marathon Man, and The Princess Bride.
Wild.
So like
wild list. Mm. All the President's
good
Men.
Good ilk.
Yeah.
Good ilk.
President's All the President's Men is the story of
good milk.
The two journalists whose names are Woodward and Bernstein, who like uncovered the Watergate sort of scandal.
Yeah.
And it's
sorry, that was Forrest Gump.
My bad.
Yeah.
Yes.
You're way off. There's some guys with some flashlights.
That's funny.
There you go.
Anyway, and that's a very in-depth, like, political film. And then he writes this. He kind of takes a shot at a fantasy film or a fantasy book, because it's based on the book he wrote. And my question then leads us to, what do you guys think of The Framing Device? Fred Savage, Peter Falk.
Love it.
Love it.
It's such an excellent choice.
And I love the little turn of, oh, kissing. And then at the end, it's like, no, you can leave that in. It's like, because we get swept up. And so does Fred Savage. Yes. I like it.
So what? Nice. What I think he's doing there that's very clever, because films sometimes can be very meta. And when they do it for no reason, they become empty and just husks, devoid of joy, really pointless exercise.
Sound like anyone?
Just thinking about it, all right? Just thinking about it. But what this film manages to do.
This droning sound.
What this film manages to do. is present something that had become pretty unpopular in the 80s. Like this fantasy storytelling was looked at kind of with people turning their nose up, especially young boys. They're like, ah, that's lame. That's stuff our parents liked. Mm-hmm. And it goes, well, let's show that kid at the start. And you can be that kid going, oh, is this what this movie is? And then you forget that's what's happening because you get so caught up in it, like you said, Frank, that you're like, I don't care that this is a young boy being told the story by his grandpa now. I believe in these characters. I'm invested in them in the same way that he is.
So you're calling me a young boy?
Yes.
Mentally.
I just won't call you late to dinner.
Yeah.
Good. Can we talk about the home movie version of The Princess Bride they made in COVID?
Yeah, tell me about it.
What?
I didn't watch it.
No, I didn't watch it either, but everyone like basically came back. They made a... Everyone's in lockdown at home and shot their own scenes at home.
They as in the cast.
They as in the cast and new people and like
Andre the Giant died in the 90s.
He's not there.
So it would have had to be someone else.
Weekend at Bernie's him, I guess.
Oh God.
Woo! John Cho is Inigo Mendoza. Oh, and Javier Bardem. Oh, so it's two episodes. Man.
Interesting.
Did he play Inigo?
Oh, and then Oscar Nunez is Inigo Mendoza. Man, there's so many people. How are there so many episodes?
So they presumably just like redid it with different casts over and over. I think that's what they did, right?
Yeah, yeah. But I didn't actually look into this before we started this right now. I'm just I'm learning this on the fly.
Yes. This is why it's such a popular and it's still a long-standing film because people just love it, right? They really stick with it.
Oh my God, Brandon Routh is in it and he plays Princess Buttercup.
Huh. Also, I love Brandon Routh. Haven't talked about Marwedge.
Oh, Peter Cook.
Oh, yes.
That is actually right after To Believe. That is one of the funniest things. Yeah. Where it starts on him and he
out
looks
of fucking
like
nowhere.
The most sickly man. And the second he opens his mouth, Marwedge. And I do, so I could be wrong. This might be like an apocryphal thing, but I think no one knew he was going to do that. I think his job was just to be like a sort of silly, effete sounding priest. And really? On the day he just goes, Marwedge, and everyone was like, no, like just started losing
Cut.
Their minds.
Everyone get ready, start
this
again.
This is it.
Peter's so funny.
Carrie says a line shortly before that scene. He says, and I wrote it down because I had no idea. He says, what wouldn't I give for a Holocaust clock?
Yeah, a Holocaust cloak. A Holocaust cloak, oh. Which we paused and went, excuse me. Yeah. And we looked it up and it turns out it is a type of cloak that dates back to sort of medieval times that is non-flammable as opposed to inflammable. So it cannot catch fire. So you know when they have Andre the Giant in the cloak and then they set him on fire and it doesn't get through.
That was my next question. How'd they do that?
That's it. It's that's a Holocaust cloak. But it's such a weird name. No idea why it's called
that. That threw me for
It must predate the Holocaust that we know.
Yes, but in the 80s it didn't. So you must have imagined people in the 80s were like, just
why would you just say inflammable?
Yeah. Or like a
worse than
a magic
clock.
Yes, a Holocaust clock.
And then no clock shows up. So why do they even mention it?
Yep.
Don't mention the war.
No context.
Very honestly. Strange. Cariolis, when he's, like you mentioned already, when he's very raggedy in those scenes is great. But we should talk about what I think is, if I was going to sit down and make a list of my 100 favorite scenes in no order from all movies.
Tom, why do you do this?
Inigo Montoya killing Christopher Guest.
Yes.
Sure. Do you not think?
Great.
What are you worried about?
Why do you just prelude into this, like, we should talk about
it? We should talk about
just talk about it.
You do it as well, pal.
Do I?
I was about to say.
Absolutely.
Never. More, probably. Listeners, you can write in. I
listeners,
think
that's optimistic.
Yeah, that's
I appreciate
listener,
you backing me
bullshit.
Up there, Frank, because I was like,
no,
I think
I'm shitting on both of you. Okay. You both waste too much time.
Hand off each other's legs.
Economy of language.
Killing Christopher Guest. Who's, great who's, scene. Can you tell me the character's name? Sorry, I can't remember what Christopher Guest's character is, but he is the six-fingered man.
Mr. Finger Bang.
Okay.
Finger Bang. Bang.
Count Rugen.
Count
Rugen.
Count Rugen.
Rugen.
He's a despicable character.
Prince, and Prince Humperdinck is very funny.
Oh, and we've got to talk about Chris Sarandon. He's, speaking of classic films, he's the voice of Jack Skellington.
Which doesn't make any sense to me.
It's you can't hear it.
That's
when
so
he's
interesting.
Doing it, but he is American. So many of them are. Like Cariolis apparently is
That's
English,
so
which is truly kind of twists my mind because I thought he was American.
No.
And then almost everyone else in this is American. So it's
and that's
like,
also a joke he makes in Robin Hood Men in Tights.
That he's American?
Yeah, because Kevin Costner can't do a British accent.
This is true.
And it's come out.
He can do a Kevin Costner accent.
Oh, he sure can. He can pretend to be Kevin Costner all day.
Yes.
Christopher Guest as
Count
Rugen.
When he first turns and throws the knife at Inigo Montoya and he falls over and says, I'm sorry, Father. And he goes, are you that little brat? Have you been chasing me this whole time just to now fail? I think that's the worst thing I've ever heard. And you're like, oh, kill this man. Like,
I hate him so much.
So infuriating. Yeah. And then Inigo Montoya manages to knock the sword either side of himself so he doesn't get stabbed. And then he starts saying over and over again, G-ing himself up like fucking Popeye mainlining spinach. Hello, my name is Inigo Montoya. You kill my father. Prepare to die. Stop saying that.
Yeah, Kennedy's like, stop saying that.
It's so good. And then finally at the end where he says, offer me money. Yes. Offer me riches. Yes. Offer me everything I could want in my wildest dreams. Anything you want. I want my father back, you son of a bitch. It's like,
yeah.
That's the greatest moment.
I thought he was going to die. I thought it was going to be really sad. Yeah. I was like, he's not going to do it. And then he starts razzing himself
up. I'm
not
trying to poo-poo on anyone else here, but I really just, I could watch a whole film on him.
Yes.
I can't speak. It's been like all day. It's been like this all day.
Have you been bashling your swash?
Yeah, bashling my swashes.
You're such a bachelor boy.
A swashbuckling adventure.
Well, you should.
No, but for real, following him would be phenomenal.
Yeah,
like,
he's
such an amazing
Inigo is an incredible character. He's one of the only two characters in this film that has his own Wikipedia page because people are obsessed with him. I think they even have his costume on display
really?
Somewhere in like a Hollywood museum.
Yeah, right? Most of them are.
He's just great. I love Inigo Montoya. I love Mandy Patinkin. What do you think of his stage work? You probably know Mandy from that more.
Oh, yeah. Wonderful Mandy singer. Moore. Sunday in the Park with George.
Oh.
Mandy Moore.
He knows Mandy.
I'm missing you like Candy. For sure. Absolutely. 100%.
I'm missing you like Mandy.
Mandy Patinkin. Come on. yeah, he's a great Broadway singer.
Is he, actually?
Yeah, for real.
I'm Patinkin.
And Jake Gyllenhaal, like, so Mandy's like famous for Sunday in the Park with George, playing George.
Say again.
Gyllenhaal and Oates. Yeah, go on.
Good. Great.
Last one.
Fucking hell. No. We're all getting to the end of our railroad.
Go on. Promise I won't interrupt. Gyllenhaal and him did Sunday.
And then Jake Gyllenhaal did Sunday in the Park with George and got Mandy Patinkin's blessing, and that was like a massive thing. I was like, oh my God, Mandy likes him as George, so therefore he must be. I'm just going to check that because if I'm wrong, I'll feel like an absolute fool. Oh, also, can we talk about, sorry.
Go on.
No, don't worry about it. I want to talk about Deadpool again. I just keep thinking about, but he loves Broadway. And he talks about Broadway a lot. Now, that's a fun little through line through all the films. So that's a great movie.
Do you have much association with Andre the Giant, Marcus, like before this movie? Because you were into wrestling when we were younger, but he's before your time.
Not enough.
Yeah, we haven't really talked much about Andre the Giant. He's very, like a very lovable
figure.
Although
we did talk about the-
Yeah, okay, I was right.
Giant Claw wrestling film.
We did recently. Talk about
and
the
Andre
Iron
the
Claw.
Giant was a reference in that.
Yes, that's true. What's the name of that family in the Von something?
Von Traps.
Quit your wrestling, the Nazis are coming.
Von Erichs?
It is the Von Erichs, I think.
So is anyone going to throw anything in?
I think this movie's exceptional. It's really, really hard for me to...
Before you go, cue me out, you Hollywood motherfucker.
Just give Marcus a moment, Frank, all right?
Frank,
you think about it. You think, has anyone convinced you that you were wrong?
For once I'm going to sit because...
Oh, for once you're going
to
sit.
Yeah, I'm easily swayed. This time, not so much. I don't feel compelled to rewatch it ever, probably. I'm glad I did. I'm glad I can tick it off, but it's not going to be a revisit. And I find that
so on average, 0 times a year.
Didn't
I get it? Okay. That's good to know.
It didn't hit the right notes for me, and I had, I guess, high expectations for the period at the time, and I guess I should have stopped comparing it to other films of the same sort of genre.
Although it's hard not to. I'm going to throw it into a 7.5. Threw in the
pan. You really like it a little bit more?
Yeah, a little bit more. Talking about the ending, it's like, it does. It just, it's good. Mandy Patinkin's good.
Well,
man,
we get that one
good
section
reward
very quickly that we didn't talk about, which is Cary Elwes in bed giving the whole speech about what he's going to do to Prince Humperdinck.
Like, oh, yeah, and
cut
like
off
scares
his ears
him.
And all this sort of, no, your ears I leave so that you can hear the scream of everyone who encounters you, and then stands up and points the sword at the camera. Drop your sword. It's so good. And Prince Humperdinck just like, take a seat, and he's like, right, and goes and sits over and grabs his.
It does anything you want. He's like, okay, yep.
Very good. So it's a good movie.
Yeah, I agree. I'm happy we watched it. Thanks for the suggestion.
Thanks for listening, guys.
Yeah, and send us an email on Instagram. ohheypals@gmail.com. And
how many O's is that in the email?
OHHEYPALS136. I'm trying to spell the email.
Queensland, Australia.
It's got a double H because oh, hey. Oh, hey, pals. Threw in the pal.
Oh, that was we just did a show together. We just spoke about a show. The three of us talking about movies.
That was throwing the power. Thanks for listening. That's Marcus.
I panicked.
That was Frank.
And that's Thomas. ohheypals@gmail.com or throwing the power at Instagram. Let us know what you love about us. Throwing the power.